सोच विचार के साथ मेरा नाम नदीम उल हक है
और मेरा नाम अंजुम अल्ताफ है.
वेलकम टू सोच विचार. I'm returning to another topic that is of interest to us. We've talked about it often, which is the civil service reform. But the reason we are returning to it right now is because it is a subject that is being hotly debated because of Prime Minister Imran Khan's election and his announcement that he is going to talk or take up the issue of institutional reform. And there is some talk of civil service reform, especially Ishrat going back. Many of you might have heard of the podcast with Ishrat about a week or 10 days ago. So we are going to continue that discussion with a young lawyer, Umar Gilani, who's written a couple of nice pieces in the newspapers on civil service reforms. And he's got a couple of cases relating to civil service reform in the courts. So we'll hear from Umar about civil service reform. Welcome, Umar.
Dr. Saab, very kind of you to invite. It's an honor to be in conversation with you.
Thank you. Tell me a little bit, before we begin, can you tell us a little bit about yourself so that people can place some context on you?
I practice as a lawyer in Islamabad. I graduated from LUMS with a degree in law and an interdisciplinary education in law and policy. Mm-hmm. And I also went to the University of Washington in Seattle on Fulbright. I have been practicing constitutional law in Pakistan for about 8 years now. Okay. And mostly I advise Pakistan, which is the premier body of engineers in Pakistan. And the reason why I got so interested in the issue of civil service reform was a set of facts which my client, the Pakistan Engineering Council, presented before me. Mm-hmm. And the stunning fact is that while the entire country is talking about a water and power crisis in Pakistan, the entire federal bureaucracy which deals with water and power is filled at the top with non-engineers. And in fact, we conducted a bit of a study that if you look at there are about 40 divisions of the federal government. Mm-hmm. Five of them, such as railway and power and water resources, five of them are purely engineering departments. You know, they can be conceived of as engineering organizations. And then there's about another eight, such as aviation and so on. And IT, which deal with a lot of engineering work. But the top tier positions, grade 20, 21, 22 of these very divisions are occupied by people who have no expertise in engineering. Mm-hmm. So I got interested in this issue and then I studied it. Actually, this is a systemic issue in civil service in Pakistan that professionals and experts are not making it to the top positions. Mm-hmm. Because the top positions have been occupied by a highly networked, small group of generalists.
The so let me summarize that. I think that's a very interesting finding. You're saying that roughly about 8 or maybe 13 ministries relate to engineering subjects, right? And there must be a number of other agencies also that relate to professional subjects. FPR, for example, is a subject that relates to accounting more than general bureaucracy. Ministry of Law pertains to law and not necessarily generalist bureaucracy. But yet you're saying that the top senior-most positions are occupied by generalist civil service, the DMG or the PAS group that rules Pakistan because they have monopoly on those positions. Okay. Fair point. We accept that. And most of these secretaries are also transferred fairly frequently. So what is the solution?
I think we need to accept that this system will not work. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I'm saying this is mm-hmm. I think there's simply not enough realization of how deep the rot is. Mm-hmm. So this government, which has been elected on the slogan of Tabdili, Naya Pakistan, mm-hmm. has just this morning made a set of appointments to the senior bureaucracy. Mm-hmm. And if you, I've shared that news report with you and I'd be happy to share it further. Well, it's very clear from the report that The Secretary of Aviation, for instance, is a person who started his career as a DMG officer heading law and order in Dera Ghazi Khan, went on to serve the post office, then went on to serve Punjab Revenue Board, and is now ended up as the Secretary of Aviation. So the solution, I believe, is that we need to have government departments should be conceived of as specialized organizations, and the top tier positions in these organizations should be held by people who have expertise. So if a person is recruited in the aviation department in grade 17, they should have a fair chance of going all the way to become the Secretary of Aviation. You know, why not? And by the time they reach that age, in that stage, they would have gathered expertise in aviation. So the Secretary of Aviation should be somebody who understands the global aviation market. And we need to grow such people within the civil service. And if necessary, we need to get people from outside the civil service, from the market, to fill these positions.
Okay. Kyunki, so basically what you're saying is, KG, we need professionals to run organizations that have become far more complex than they used to be. See, my take is, and this is what I wrote my book on, that we are hanging on to a colonial system. The colonial system, which was invented by Lord Macaulay or his people way back in the 19th century, maybe even the early or the 18th century, they created a bureaucracy that was going to keep control of the population and extract resources from here to send to England. So it's an extractive, controlling, centralized mechanism. We have inherited that and we have used that to hold this country together, but without worrying about the new needs of development and public services in Pakistan, right? And those new needs are being provided by these same people who were raised to extract and control. And you are saying that we need to change that system and we need to bring in professionals. Correct. But how do we do that? I mean, can we adapt this system or do we need to change the system?
So I think we need a little bit of both. In the short run, like and I'm saying right now, this should have been done. The government elected on Tabdili should have done it, could have done it right now. It does not require any amendment in the law. It does not require anything except political will. This is what we can do. We can create more occupational groups. So, for instance, we don't have a group of civil aviators in the civil service. So I'll go back to the year 1973. See, before, I think you're quite correct to point out that the basic structure of the system is still what the colonial masters left us with. But in 1973, we had a, with much fanfare, we had a series of reforms, which as a result of which the government did try and bring some specialization, some expertise, some professionalism in the civil service. What they said, what they did in 1973 is they abolished the civil service of Pakistan, the CSP generalists, and instead created about 12 groups of specialized civil servants. These groups include the Foreign Service and the Police Service and the Audit and Accounts Department and so on and so forth. The first three that I've mentioned, Foreign Service, Police, Audit and Accounts, they generally function at least a little better than the others. So what I'm saying is if we have 40 departments, perhaps we can create 40 occupational groups so that, let's say the let's take the aviation department. A person is recruited as a civil servant at the age of 25 or 30, and they're recruited in the aviation department, and then they spend the next.
I see your point, Omar, but I don't know. Should we have grades for every perceivable profession in the civil service? I think we have to also recognize that the needs or public service are many and multifaceted. We can't have an occupational group for everything. Perhaps it's time to let go of this tendency to centralize everything and allow some decentralization to happen. For example, there should be no reason to have an aviation ministry. There should be no reason to think about aviation as a as a federal or provincial subject. Aviation is, airports and this thing, etc. They can be a regulatory body. Or even if you want a ministry, there can be a ministry. But it should be independent of the government. Let it be outside the civil service.
I think that that's a very fair point. So I think we need a whole series of reforms. Okay. So stripping government down is definitely an important part. Mm-hmm. In some ways, we have moved in that direction since the last several decades. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, we have a civil aviation authority which is technically under the law independent, mm-hmm. and playing liaison supervisory role. Mm-hmm. Although in practice, because there is a ministry out there, its role has grown far beyond what is required or what is even legal. Mm-hmm. So I agree with your suggestion that wherever there is a statutory regulatory body in existence, such as Civil Aviation Authority, there should be no ministry at all.
In fact, the received wisdom, as far as I can see from public administration, is that the tasks of public policy development, public policy implementation, and regulation need to be separated. They say that it is better for ministries to only do policy and nothing else, and that the agencies of the government should do implementation of policy, and that the task of regulation should be totally independent of both of them. So in some sense, we need to think about how to configure government. Right now, the civil service takes on everything. It develops policy, it implements policy, it regulates. And that is what is making a mess of the marketplace. Would you not agree?
I would definitely agree. I think, we need to, I think that sort of specialization is directly linked with professionalization. Mm-hmm. So in the colonial structure, the government the government doesn't need to have expertise, it just needs to have power.
Yeah.
And once it has the power, it can do anything. So it can produce goods, it can regulate the production of goods, and it can even make a policy about both.
Being a lawyer and a constitutional lawyer, you will also appreciate that the government should not have absolute power over everything. The whole point of good governance is to limit the power of government. I mean, the absolute power of kings in 16th, 17th century was challenged by, all kinds of forces. And eventually we came to the conclusion that the government power must be severely limited. And Fukuyama, for example, says that the whole point of rule of law is to limit the power of the government. So in that sense, the government must also be limited by the rule of law. So the government must limit itself that, hey, regulation has to be separated from policy. Policy has to be regulated from implementation. And all the ministries, I was challenged by this by a minister once. So what should I do? I said, you should sit down and do some research. Look at things that are happening in the country. You are at the board of governors. You are not the functionary that runs the government. You look at things and you give guidance wherever it's necessary. And very careful guidance through parliament, through cabinet, because there are checks everywhere. But would you not agree?
No, I fully agree that we need clarity about the proper legal, constitutional and proper role for government. Mm-hmm. And there is a view in Pakistani constitutional lawyers, mm-hmm. that under Article 18 of the Constitution, mm-hmm. the only legitimate scope for government's interference in business is regulation. Mm-hmm. So a government cannot, there is an argument that the government cannot restrict the freedom of trade except for a very specific number of reasons. Mm-hmm. And I think if you take the spirit of the Article 18 of our Constitution, mm-hmm. and the government has no business being in the airlines business, mm-hmm. The government's proper role is only to regulate the market when there's a market failure. Mm-hmm. Or actually, this point was taken up in by the Sindh High Court in a case where the government was regulating the fees of private schools. Mm-hmm. So the Sindh High Court said that to exercise the power of regulation, you must first establish where there has been a market failure.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, we have had a far more brutish and a far more broad exercise of government regulatory power in the past. I think that needs to be challenged, and it can be challenged both in the political and in the legal arena.
Okay. So now the question is, you've sorted out that civil service, for example, needs to be reformed, and it has to be a very deep reform, and it has to talk about breaking up the civil service into many different functions. Right now, it's a unified civil service, a centralized civil service. So you're saying there should be professional cadres, there should be professional ways of running certain ministries, certain departments, aviation being an example. And you also saying that perhaps there should be that we should separate clearly, according to the constitution, the powers of policy development, implementation, and regulation. Okay, taken. So if we do that, that means, and I would also add another thing. For example, in the old days, the civil service was just one unified agency, like, you know, even today it's the same, that when a junior guy gets into the civil service, he becomes a magistrate, then he becomes a DC, so he's a local official. After that, he graduates to becoming a provincial official, he becomes a secretary, etc. He becomes a provincial official. After he graduates from provincial official, as he gets older, he becomes a federal secretary. So as far as I can see, there's one civil service that runs local government, that runs provincial government, that runs federal government. Is that a good system?
I think it's a disaster. And I think most serious students of Pakistani government are coming to the conclusion that we don't have a tyrannical government and we don't have an efficient government. We have an anarchic government. Because the structure of, a state structure which is built on lines which you've just described, it can't function. It's impossible in the year 2018, where everything requires so much specialized know-how, that sort of a system cannot work, and it is not working. So I'll give you I think what needs to happen, firstly, the idea that there are 40. So I'm looking at the federal government only. Provincial governments and federal governments are separate in the constitution, and it is absurd to be talking about both of them in the same breath. Right now, this is what is happening. It needs to change. But I'll just stick to the federal government here. I believe that the federal government should not be have a common exam to induct civil servants in all 40 divisions. If there are 40 divisions of the federal government, each one of them needs to have its own recruitment mechanism. Because, for somebody to be working in the Ministry of, for somebody, the skill set which is required of a junior appointee in the Ministry of Defense or the Ministry of Aviation is totally different from the skill set that is required for somebody who's going to be working in the Ministry of Statistics or the Ministry of Economic Affairs or the Ministry of Power. These are all specialized divisions of the federal government. Each division should do its own recruitment. They should have their own recruitment criteria. If I am going to be inducted in the Ministry of Power, I need to be an engineer or possibly, a lawyer with expertise in power engineering, in the power sector. I need to have specialized skills. If I'm being inducted in the Ministry of Communication, I need a different set of skills. So the specialization needs to happen at the level of recruitment, and it needs to be different for all 40 divisions.
There's another problem, yeah. Look, think about it, Omar. Now, even a young man like you probably cannot get into the civil service if you wanted to today, right?
No, I definitely can't.
You're too old for it, right?
Exceeded the age. Yeah.
Why is it that civil servants must get their job at the early 20s and after that they are guaranteed every job in the government? I mean, that is like a trade union. I can't think of it any other way. It's a trade union.
or it's a colonial service, because I think that right? I'll hearken back to we can't divorce ourselves from history. Nobody mm-hmm. who's trying to do governance reforms mm-hmm. can afford not to study history.
Mm-hmm.
In the 1800s, why is it that the British induct about 1,000 people mm-hmm. in the Indian Civil Service and give just about every job in the country, every leading public service job to them? Because the British cannot trust the people. They can only trust a carefully selected bunch of 1,000 people. That's exactly, that is still happening. Why has Imran Khan appointed a man with post office experience as the aviation secretary? Because he feels that he can't trust anyone other than this bunch of people. This is clearly outdated. It can't work. I would propose a more a model of civil service where people are both flowing in from the private sector and flowing out.
Okay. You're absolutely right. Now we've decided that we need to break up the civil service, or at least the centrality or the centralization of power of the civil service. We need to have professional agencies. We need to have civil servants. We need to put them in their positions. That means that they are only there for policy development and monitoring, right? We need to have regulatory agencies that are outside the civil service system, where civil servants can't be appointed and some professionals will be appointed. We need to have implementation agencies where, again, civil servants are not appointed, somebody else. Secondly, we need to have local and provincial government that are totally separate. For example, I have lived in Chicago, I've lived in London, I've lived in Washington, D.C. Everywhere, the civil service is of the city. It is not that of the federal government or the state. All three governments have separate civil services. They don't talk to each other. They're not part of each other. They may meet and discuss things, but they are not. You can't be transferred from one or the other place. The second thing that you mentioned, which is very important, is that the recruitment system must be different. There must be entry at all levels. And different ways of hiring people. For example, MA English and speaking good English is not the only mechanism. In some places, you might need engineering skills. In some places, you might need technical skills. But tell me two things. Should we have transfers?
I think the kind of transfers which we now have, that is a recipe for disaster.
So how should we handle the issue of transfers?
I think just like private organizations do, mm-hmm. if a person wants to be transferred, they have to justify why. Mm-hmm. So if I'm working in the Ministry of Finance and all of a sudden I think I am good enough to be transferred to the Ministry of Power, I need to justify why I, whether I possess that skill.
Okay.
Whether I, whether that department really needs me.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, the idea should be that if you've been appointed to a certain job, mm-hmm. there was a reason why you were appointed,
mm-hmm.
and you should Fair continue enough. Functioning until that reason is there.
Fair enough. Now,
just to intrude, mm-hmm. in my reading of the Civil Servants Act, even today,
mm-hmm.
If civil servant's holding has been appointed to a certain post, he cannot be transferred unless without giving reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously those reasons must be solid. Although in practice, of course, this will happen.
Okay. Listen, the way I look at it in most governments, I used to work for the International Monetary Fund. And that is also a bureaucracy, let's put it that way. It is not anything but a bureaucracy. We had mobility rules. Yes, everybody recognized it's important to move. You can't stay in one position forever. We had mobility rules, but nobody, not even the managing director of the bank, of the fund, sorry, or the president of the World Bank, has the power to transfer anybody in the place. There are mobility rules and there are ways in which you must move, and that those can be set in place, but nobody's forced to move every day or every morning or whatever. So that's an important thing. The last point that I want to raise with you is, so what do we do about attracting good people? How do you attract good people? Right now, they say the salaries are very bad. They say the salaries are like, for example, you're a lawyer. Tell me what a young lawyer, I mean, I don't want to hear about your personal detail, but what a good young lawyer makes in the field today. Don't give me your personal information, but general.
Well, I'll just give you, I think
what
a young
lawyer. What does a make? Yeah, go ahead.
Firstly, it really depends upon which area you're practicing
sure,
in.
Sure.
So if I'm practicing, you know, and that any... any you know model for remuneration needs to take account of factors such as where you're living
yeah.
and how much you have to spend.
Good point.
And then there are different areas of law in which people will earn more and less. Mm-hmm. But you know in Islamabad, if somebody is a reasonably talented young lawyer in their early 30s, mm-hmm. they would be making something between 100,000 to 200,000 rupees.
Okay.
But if they make it big, they can go much higher.
Right. So we can pay them according to the market rules. I know, for example, in every country, and Pakistan has the same thing, that there are private sector surveys that are done to determine the salaries in private sectors. And in Singapore, for example, they fix salaries according to those surveys. Right? Singapore, they give a discount. They say, okay, we'll give a discount to the private sector because government service should be building up your career and therefore you're investing in government service. But they do two things. They give salaries that are equivalent, not equivalent, but at a discount, but some discount, not a whole lot of discount. That discount is determined by parliament. We can even say we don't have to give a discount. It can be at par with the private sector. We pay private sector salaries, right? And we attract the best people. But then there is a big problem. Our civil servants are paid 100,000 to 200,000 rupees as a salary, but they are given perks worth maybe 10 or 12 million rupees because their houses are worth about 500,000. Their cars are worth another 500,000. Their servants and utilities, etc., are worth another 200,000-300,000. Their board memberships are worth another 500,000. So we give them a lot of money. It's not as if they're poor. Then we give them plots. So that's worth another few million rupees. What do we do if we give them so much money, but we can't attract people, but we can give them private sector salaries and save money and still attract the best people? Is that possible or not?
So if I may be allowed a general comment, Dr. Sir, both the recruitment mm-hmm. and the remuneration model that we have. Mm-hmm. The remuneration model, as you explained, is that they won't pay you cash, mm-hmm. but they will pay you in other means, such as, you know, they'll give you employees, they'll give you servants, they'll give you a house, they'll give you a car, they'll give you free places to stay in Mari and Nathia Gali, mm-hmm. and so on. So the entire remuneration mm-hmm. model is meant to build a separate class of civil servants.
Mm-hmm.
And a civil servant, you know, has no option but to stick to that class, to enjoy the perks and privileges of that class, and to be loyal to it. That is the colonial order of things. It needs to change. We need to monetize the incentives, one. And two, we need to bring them in parity with the market. This is bringing incentives at parity with the market or almost close to it, with a discount, as you mentioned, is important not just to attract talent, but also to break this class culture.
Good point.
A person who's working, you know, for the Ministry of Aviation or for the Ministry of Finance should be focused on the skill set that they have and what they
good
can
point.
Give to the government. They shouldn't be focused on who they are.
Good point. Very good point. Excellent. Excellent, Omar. I think this is an excellent discussion. Thank you very much for giving us some really good points. I think
very grateful to you for giving me the opportunity.
It's really a comprehensive plan. I think if you go on this route, I hope Ishrat listens to it, this is really the way to make the reform happen. And I would recommend that he take you on his committee to try and make this happen. So, you know, we need young people like you to envisage and develop the reform. So my recommendation would be people like you should be taken on that committee. Thank you. The next episode I want to do with you is in constitutional reform, because I think our constitution has deep flaws in it. If you listen to our earlier podcast, I've done a few podcasts with quite a few young people, Bakhtawar Sufi and Adnan Rasool, I think, quite a few people who to discuss the constitution. So next time we will discuss the constitution, take it up on that, and perhaps you can give us some insights on what constitutional reforms we should do.
Thank you very much, and we hope to, I hope to continue learning from your conversations.
सोच विचार के साथ मेरा नाम नदीम उल हक है
और मेरा नाम अंजुम अल्ताफ है.